during the treatment, they start to think about the family. They want to understand what really happened, for example, to their parents, what made them to be such monsters for their own child, for example. And they start to look for the origins of the family and the history of the family. It happens that they found a transgenerational traumas. And from both sides, I mean, they belong to family whose members, their grandparents or grandparents, were victims. And they found a history where their grandparents were persecutors. I think that is something that on the personal level, we all the time have to leave. And when you can read, for example, the memoirs of different people, you can have also this both sides. The people who realizes that, for example, in their family, there was the secrets connected with the, for example, the fact that they were Jews and they have to hide their identity. And till now, they are afraid to speak open about it. And there are parts of completely delayed history of, for example, what happens to the properties of the family, how the family got this house, how the family got those properties after the Second World War.
Welcome to the Psychoanalysis On and Off the Couch podcast. For the past few years, we've been speaking with analysts from around the world who've been applying their analytic way of thinking, not only to their offices, but also off the couch, in venues external to their consulting rooms. We've spoken to analysts who work in hospitals, in prisons, in community health centers, in refugee clinics, just to name a few. We've also detoured, of course, during COVID. We've spoken with analysts again from around the world to learn from our communities how they, their patients, and the analytic community in general have been dealing with this crisis. And hopefully, the worst is over, and we can return to our main focus. We can return to speaking to analysts who are bringing their skills to people who otherwise would never see the inside of an analyst's office. In addition to that, we're speaking with the elders of our field, people who have been practicing this craft for 40 and 50, sometimes longer years, to learn from them what they have to teach us, not only about this piece of history that we're all living through, but their reflections on our field. Please visit us at our website, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can leave a comment, where you can subscribe. I hope you find these conversations thoughtful and meaningful, and I appreciate your listening. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Edita Biernacka, who is a psychoanalyst in the Polish Psychoanalytic Society and also the vice president. She is a supervisor and training psychotherapist for the Polish Psychoanalytical Psychotherapy Society, and she's a therapist and supervisor of the Personality Disorders Unit in the psychiatric Babinski Clinic in Krakow, Poland, where she also has a private practice. In our conversation today, we first discuss the status of psychoanalysis in Poland. We talk about the Ukraine refugees. An enormous number of refugees have both come through Poland, have stayed in Poland, have been welcomed and supported by Poland. And she shares with us some of the magnitude of the challenges that are faced by the community and the government in Poland, and touches upon history that was new to me, the history of massacres, as she describes it, between Ukrainians and Poles before, during, and after World War II. And that intergenerational transmission of trauma, of course, includes
what it's like for Poles having lived through World War II, both suffered terribly at the hands of the Germans and also been involved in their own causing of suffering for many of their own citizens who were Jews. This is a complicated story. She shares with us remarkable openness, honesty, and wisdom about this. I learned a lot. I was moved by hearing her thoughts and her honesty, and I hope you find this as an important conversation as I did. Here is my interview with psychoanalyst Edita Bionatska.
Edita, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you're with us. Edita, the whole world is focused on a daily basis about the horrors taking place in Ukraine as a result of the Russian invasion. But unless one really digs deep into what this experience is, the tendency is not to think about the neighboring countries, though they too are being affected, obviously not like Ukraine. And one of the countries most affected is yours in Poland. And you've shared with me some of the numbers involved, and they're remarkable numbers, and I'll ask you to present them in just a moment. But what makes the challenge so intense for both the Poles and the Ukrainians is your history together. It's a very difficult history that started both before, during, and after World War II, which makes the current situation even more fraught. Before we get to that, let's start with the status of Polish psychoanalysis. It is not something many of us, at least in the West, are aware of. And fill us in on what the status of the society is, what training is like, how it lives in the mental health community and in relation to the government, so we can get a feel for what the psychoanalytic life is like for you.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for the invitation. It's a privilege to have this opportunity to meet and to share with you our experiences. So the Polish psychoanalytic society, it's not a big one because we have about 119 people. It's 80 members and 39 candidates. And what's interesting, during last year, we really can observe that we have more and more candidates, which is unusual and a bit surprising. But I thought that maybe after those years when people are really wanted to have everything fast and cheap and easy, the number of people who are interested in deeper thinking and deeper work with patients and deeper understanding of human conditions increases. So it's something I'm glad about. And as I said, it's not a big society, so we try to cooperate with other psychoanalytical society in Poland. I mean, the Polish Psychoanalytical Psychotherapy Society, Group Analysis Society, and we try to make a kind of federation which to have more influence on mental health policy in Poland, because what is most popular and most promoted in mental health service in Poland, of course, is cognitive behavioral therapy, because it's cheap and fast. That's always National Health Service want that. So we try to cooperate to establish the better position for psychoanalysts in mental health service, and especially in child and adolescence units, which is very needed. And that field of mental health service in Poland is in very poor condition and needs to be deeply reformed. So we try to gain some influence.
Now, you say the number of candidates are increasing. Number one, that's delightful news. That isn't the case all over the world, certainly. But one of the challenges that we see in many places is not only having candidates be interested, but also having candidates have access to control cases or training cases. How is that in your community?
I don't think it's a problem. I mean, the candidates are mainly from big cities like Warsaw, Krakow, and Gdańsk, or three cities at the seaside. And when I meet candidates, when I meet them at the seminars, I haven't heard that, that they have problems with the access to the patients. And as far as I know, the private practices of my colleagues and my own works, we have no problems with patients. We have more problems with space for them. So we have always more patients interested in psychoanalysis or intense psychoanalytical psychotherapy. I mean, 3 times a week, for example, there are people, a lot of people who are interested in such psychotherapy.
Let me just underline what you've just said, because it's so notable. You've said that in the Polish Psychoanalytic Society, on the one hand, it's small, but you've also said that you've had increased numbers of candidates in recent years, and no one has any shortage of patients. That deserves to be underlined.
Yes, I haven't heard about people who had problems to establish their practice. But of course, we have to be aware about what numbers we are talking about. I mean, when we have a lot of candidates, I mean that the seminar group for this year will be 8 people. So it's not a huge crowd,
Sure. But there are many institutes in all parts of the world that have to skip years because there aren't candidates. So, and I know you've said that in past years you've had to do the same, but now it's on an upswing, which is wonderful to hear. And you've formed consortium with other groups, both in Poland and outside of Poland as well. Is that the case? You work with other psychoanalytic societies?
I mean that federation is only for the Polish societies, but of course we cooperate in IPA boards and EPF boards. So I mean we also cooperate in international level with the other societies, but the federation I meant is only Polish.
Okay. Now, your world, when I say you, I mean you personally and also the world of your community changed this past February with the invasion. Can you walk us through what that was like from the Poland experience?
It was, I think that the personal experience of the most of people was something like that, oh, no, not again. Because it's something what we know very well. Well, now it's September, and that on the 1st of September, the Germany invaded Poland in 1939. And yesterday, it was the day of anniversary of Russian invasion. They invaded us 17th of September 1939, as the outcome of a pact between Nazis, Germany, and Stalin's Russia. So when that February came, I think that most people in Poland felt that we are dealing with the same. And the first reaction was that we have to escape, that we have to flee, or that we have to fight because the war is coming to our border. I can tell you, my son, who is 25, came to me the day after the beginning of the war, and he asked, "Mom, where are we going to go? We're going to Spain or England or wherever." Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. I just wait what's going on. And after 2 weeks, my son came back and said that, okay, he made his mind. He wants to stay and fight if the Russians are going to come, and he won't let them to destroy our life. So I think that was the kind of attitude that we all went through for those few weeks. But what's really started, it's not the war for us, and we realized that after a few weeks, it was really what happened with Ukraine. And during few days, hundreds of thousands of refugees appeared in Poland. Till now, it's 6,800,000 Ukrainians who came to Poland. Some of them now came back to Ukraine, and some of them went to the Western Europe. But still, there are 3 million and 200,000 about who left, who stayed in Poland. So the number, the population in Poland increased in few months from 37 million to more than 40 million. So it really makes a difference. And I think that what was very surprising for me, it was something I really didn't expect, it was the number of people who engaged in help. Hundreds of thousands of Polish people started to help. Some of them went to the border to help the refugees with their private cars to take them to the cities all over the Poland to help them to get in touch with their families. We helped our friends and acquaintances to get to Poland, to organize life day, to rent a flat, to find a job. I have colleagues who accept the Ukrainian refugees just in their flat. They offer their rooms and spaces, and they help them to completely foreign people. They just invited them to their houses, and that's how it happened that we don't have those refugees camps, not at all. All those million people, they had to spend several weeks or some more often several days in that common places organized at schools or old shopping centers or places like that. But after a few days or a few weeks, they can find a place in different cities in Poland with help of family of private people. And I've read the information lately that the help we gave to the Ukrainians, the private help in Poland costs about 10 billion zlotys. It's much more than that government offered for refugees. So it was something really amazing.
And this despite a history of terrible bitterness between the two countries. Yeah,
that's why it was so unbelievable for me, because, you know, I don't know, a few months earlier, we have that National Day on November. So last November, we have marches on streets in Poland with those people shouting Poland only for Polish people and white power and so on. And after a few months, I think that partly the same people get really involved in helping the refugees.
The same people. Right.
Yeah, I think partly, probably not all of them, they were marching, but I think some of them, really, they did. And that history we have with Ukrainians is horrible. There was a lot of massacres and a lot of persecution from the nationalist government before the Second World War. And a lot of massacres.
Can you outline that? Because I'm sure many of our listeners are not familiar with that history.
Yes. Yeah, so it was a lot of really hundreds of thousands of people were murdered by their neighbors, because they are Polish and Ukrainians living in the southern east part of Poland, and they murdered each other. And it was organized by and a lot of Ukrainian groups at the end of the Second World War and during Second World War. So it's something still very difficult in our history. And those hatred against Ukrainian was really raised by the Polish government, which is really nationalistic one. And it all happened before, of course, the February this year. But now, of course, sometimes you can hear people that saying that you cannot trust Ukrainian. But
the nationalist government, you're saying, in Poland stirred up anti-Ukraine sentiment, borrowing back from 80 years ago.
Yeah,
Is that what happened? I see.
Yes, yes. They should apologize that they never apologized properly, that they that we need some kind of reparation, maybe not the same kind like now we deserve from German and even from Czech. What happened, I think, 2 weeks ago, that we started to ask Czechs to explain some border problems. So it's absolutely crazy what they do. But anyway, the policy was like that before the
February.
And
then it all changed. And then it all changed with the...
Yes, they stopped. Yeah, they stopped that. I think that's not because they believed it, but it would be against the people now, because absolutely the most of Polish people are absolutely sure that we need to help Ukrainians.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that we... Of course, the important part is that we share the same fear of Russia, and we have even more difficult history with Russia than with Ukraine. So, because it's different, that we have that group of partisans, which was terrible, and they were massacres done by Ukrainians in the Second World War. But of course, it's different that when it's organized by the state.
Yes.
So it makes a difference. And so I think that now we have the opportunity to forgive, to forget, and to feel that kind of brotherhood with these people. And I've heard that, I think that I read the in the newspaper last week, that the teachers who were asked how Polish pupils deal with their Ukrainian colleagues at schools, because almost 200 Ukrainian kids are in Polish schools now. And most of them, like about 70%, said that the kids are very friendly towards them. They help them. They help them with linguistic problems. They help them with lessons. They try to make friendship with them. So they're treated very well by Polish colleagues at schools. Mostly, of course, I'm sure that there are different cases, but mostly.
Now, you had mentioned the challenges of integrating at times people with disabilities and people with family, emotional or physical problems. Even some kids, again, from Ukraine who have not been vaccinated. These are all challenges that your government and health system are struggling with.
Yes, and that at the very beginning, there was few weeks that I think that the Polish health service was really overburdened by the people who came, because a lot of they came mainly women and children, elderly people, and handicapped people who couldn't stay and fight, and who are most vulnerable in those situations. So a lot of them needed treatment. A lot of them were ill because, you know, during that escape, a lot of got ill. They infected with COVID. They haven't been vaccinated before.
And not just for COVID, but for all childhood diseases, you say?
Yeah. Yes, yes. That's a problem, because that the state policy and the health policy in Ukrainian was different. So a lot of vaccination were not obligatory. So now in Poland, that we have kids with all those childhood diseases, which haven't been existed in Poland for many years. Right. Now we have to deal with that. But till now, at this moment, I don't think it's not up to the point which would be unbearable for Polish health service. And I think that the most Ukrainian really wants to cooperate. They are grateful for the help, so they want to cooperate. They want to join the society, and a lot of them, of course, they want to come back home only when it's possible. But some of them claims they want to stay in Poland anyway.
And would they be welcome?
Yes, I think so. We lack people to work. So a lot of people started to work in Poland. And I think that they are welcome. And of course, we have problems with childbirths, the number of people in Poland, like in the other Western countries, decreases lately. So we have new citizens with children who want to stay, who want to learn, study, and to work. So they are welcome.
Right. Speaking as analysts, you mentioned before with the history between Ukraine and Poland is that it's to forgive and forget. But we, of course, know it's not as simple as that. I had the pleasure of visiting Poland this past summer, and I saw a beautiful rebuilt Warsaw. But the beautiful buildings, which had to be rebuilt because essentially the entire city, 85% of the city, was turned into rubble. Literally nothing there anymore. And it's a remarkable rebuilding. But we as clinicians know that that doesn't solve the problem. That history lives in all of us. And what Poland went through, complicated history, 20% of your population was killed in World War II. 20%. 3 million Jewish Poles were killed. 3 million non-Jewish Poles were killed. Vast numbers of Poles were horribly treated in labor camps. When I was visiting, I spoke to people who shared with me that their grandparents, it was as close as just their grandparents, some of them hid Jews. Some people shared with me that their grandparents betrayed Jews. And they also reminded me of something I had known but had forgotten, that among all the nations that Germany subjugated, it was only Poland where if you hit a Jew, you yourself would be killed if they're caught. Other countries, there were other punishments, but only for Poles would you suffer death of you and your entire family. So these are impossibly difficult situations, but we know that this lives in all of us. And can you tell us about, from the perspective of a Polish psychoanalyst, what this is like for you, what this is like in your office, what this is like among your colleagues, how it relates to your relationship with German colleagues, with Israeli colleagues? Where does this live? How is this being dealt with?
So starting maybe with more basic level, that's something what I realized when we were talking a few minutes ago. It's the fact that there is no system for treating trauma in Poland. So, in fact, the best mental problem you can have in Poland to get proper help is to be alcohol addicted. We have perfect system for treating alcohol addicted people. You can find help in every single small town, in every place, and professional, well organized, and good help. But when you're traumatized, when you suffer PTSD, when you're victim of rapes or violence, or even, I don't know, car accident or something like that, there is no help for you in public mental health. That's amazing. That's the only field of mental health we cannot see. We only treat veterans. We treat soldiers and policemen and firemen who suffer PTSD. So I think that it says something about it, how difficult it is in Poland. And from the prospect of the private practice, when I meet traumatized patients, which is very often, and it's especially often in the personality disorders treatment ward where I work, and I deal a lot with people who are severely traumatized. And when during the treatment, they start to think about the family, they want to understand what really happened, for example, to their parents, what made them to be such monsters for their own child, for example. And they start to look for the origins of the family and origins and the history of the family. it happens that they found a transgenerational traumas, and from both sides. I mean, they belong to family whose members, their grandparents or grandparents, were victims, and they found a history where their grandparents were persecutors. And I think that is something that on the personal level we all the time have to leave. And when you can read, for example, the memoirs of different people, you can have also this both sides. The people who realizes that, for example, in their family, there was the secrets connected with the fact that they were Jews and they have to hide their identity. And till now, they are afraid to speak open about it. And there are parts of completely delayed history of, for example, the what happens to the properties of the family, how the family got this house, how the family got those properties after the Second World War. Because, you know, I used to have my private practice, my office in the old Jewish district in Krakow. And after the Second World War, of course, there were no Jews, but there were people who came and who started to live in those houses. They took over the properties of the Jews, and they took advantage of it for years, and even now it's part of them becomes the city became the owner of these buildings and so on. So it's really complicated history because, for example, you have to think about it, that you somehow took advantage of it, that the nation somehow took advantage, even if the family helped Jews during the Second World War. But we, all of us as a nation, took advantage of Jewish properties after the Second World War.
And how do you find this? How do you hear this in the office? How does it show up? I mean, it's one thing to talk about the social, moral, and political dimension, but we analysts have a special access to the inner life of individuals, so we can understand it with more nuance. And what have you learned from this?
Well, I think it often happens that it shows as a kind of the feeling of being possessed by something. I mean that people not believe that in fact possessed. I mean not in a psychotic way. It's just as if they were possessed. There's something stranger inside me. Something which acts, and I cannot understand why. Why I react this way? Why I react for those kind of situation this way, and it's a kind of that feeling of something mysterious, something hidden, unspoken, and you know there is and there is the Polish film about it character of Dybbuk. You know Dybbuk?
Yes, the Dybbuk, sure.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain Dybbuk for those who may not be familiar? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Dybbuk, it's the ghost of the person who died but cannot go away and invades someone else. And I think it's we have a lot of it's something like that where that we have all those Dybbuks in different relationships and situation that and when we start to think about it, when people can get access to their curiosity about the history of the family, they dare to ask questions, and sometimes they cannot get the answers from their parents and or grandparents, the lack of answers sometimes is an answer too. It's something which still cannot be spoken.
And what happens when they learn to speak? They learn to hear, and they learn to speak of the past. How does that live between the two of you and the transference, perhaps? Or how does that affect their life? How does living in a stolen home, to use your example, how do people organize their minds around that?
Well, it's difficult because it's dealing with feeling of guilt, of course, and it's dealing with that awareness that there are things that cannot be repaired and they cannot be forgiven, but they can be understood, and it's a kind of relief. So I think that maybe it's not so much when I'm thinking about my about particular patients, and of course I won't go to the details.
Yes, of course.
But I think what was important for me, they were two things, and I think that they're quite common. The one is that those transgenerational guilt is something that I have to deal with. I cannot say, okay, it's not my business because they were my grandparents and they did wrong. It has nothing to do with me. Up to a certain point, maybe, but this feeling of guilt is now belongs to me, and now I have to do something about it. So I have to admit it's a part of my identity. And the second thing I think is that about the forgiveness. I think that sometimes we cannot expect forgiveness, or we cannot demand that. But what it could be available, it's understanding. And it is possible to understand without forgiving, but it also gives a kind of relief that you can imagine what happened to those people, why did they make such choices, and that you have to realize that, I can remember about one of my colleagues who said that her patient who had Jewish origins at some point during the analysis asked her, what would you do when it was you during the Second World War and I would come to you and ask if you can hide me, what would you do? And my colleague didn't say what she answered to this patient, but I think that's a kind of question we often deal. And I think that what we have to, I think I would like to work through is the fact that I don't know. That the most honest answer is, I don't know what I would do if I have to choose between my family and my life and the people who needs my help. And so I think it's a part of dealing with this situation.
I'm grateful for your honesty. It is an impossible situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your sense, you've told me, is the welcome arms that the Polish community has offered to Ukraine, you see as a reaction to a reparation for what happened in the war. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, as I said, I hope so. It is a part of the process because, from time to time, I had the feeling that for the Polish people, it's a kind of contest, an international contest for the most unhappy nation in the world.
Right.
And we should win the first prize, no doubt. and we struggle for that as really for something the most important of our life. But I think that when the war started and we faced the current ruthless cruelty of this war, I think that, or I would like to think, that we realized how stupid it was. And it really doesn't matter.
How stupid it is to compete for the greatest suffering.
Yes,
is that what you mean?
Yes, yes, right. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. So that if there are just people who need help, we need help if we can, because it's an unusual situation for us that we are in a better position. It have never happened very often in our history. So, of course, we can. And I think we were struggling with that because, you know, when the war started, hundreds of, and maybe thousands of Polish people went to the passport offices to get the passport for them, to prepare to go abroad, to prepare to escape. And I don't know how it works now. I can't see those lines between the offices anymore. So maybe all the people they needed, they got their passports. That's why. But I think that that at some point we decided we're going to stay and we're going to help those people. And no matter. And I've heard a lot of voices like that. That no matter what happened 80 years ago, now we have to take care of those people because they need that.
If only the trajectory of the world was going in such a positive direction everywhere, no matter what happened 80 years ago, now we just have to take care of our neighbors. What a lovely spirit.
I would like to think it works like that. I hope it works like that now in Poland. When I see those, really, I know many people who really got engaged in that. We, the people who collect the money to rent a flat for Ukrainian family, to give them clothes, toys for kids, and so on, so on. And a lot of people were involved. So I think that a lot of people share this attitude. Maybe not forever, probably not forever, but till now.
Well, we can celebrate the moment then. How's that?
Yeah.
Yes. For now, there's a sweetness, at least from the part of the Polish community. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Well,
nothing else comes to my mind.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you for being available, being as honest and forthcoming, and the graciousness of your spirit to both offer your own personal reflections on your history, your family history, your country's history, and for us to be able to end on a note of graciousness and generosity is always welcome. Zita, thank you for being with us. I'm grateful.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your invitation and for your curiosity about what's happening in Poland. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.